is everyone. Good morning. And welcome to ULT, located in Philadelphia. As everyone knows by now, we're here to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P.B., H.P. Blavatsky, that is, and William Q. Judge. And please recall to your mind that the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, does not concern itself with dissensions and differences or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect and yet belongs to each and all. And of course, if you wish, you may inquire at the desk or the usher's chair that being in sympathy with purpose of this lodge as set forth in its declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. Everyone knows that we opened the doors this morning at 10:30 and we began promptly at 11. For our Sunday meetings. Of course, on Wednesday nights, we open the doors at 5:30 so that you can come in and spend a couple hours at least in our library. Meeting on Wednesday night begin promptly at 7:30. Library closes at 7:15. You have a book table. As you walk in the front door, you will notice book cabinets. Stop at the desk. There's a volunteer there who will explain to you how to buy the books, how to make a contribution if you wish, because we exist solely by individual contributions of time, and as you see, work and money. At the present time, on Wednesday nights, we're studying in the Ocean of Theosophy. And this Wednesday coming, the topic will be evolution of the cosmos. Today, our topic will be Theosophical landmarks. And we would advise that you stop and pick up one of these interesting little pamphlets because there's more on them than we heard this morning. And you will certainly be, your mind will certainly be caught up in such discussions towards the one truth. Now, it is our custom before we begin the talk this morning, we have a short paragraph, two of them, which speak for themselves and say, the birth and evolution of the sacred science of the past both are lost in the very night of time. It is only by bringing before the reader an abundance of proofs, all tending to show that in every age, under every condition of civilization and knowledge, the educated classes of every nation made themselves the more or less faithful echoes of one identical system and its fundamental traditions. That he can be made to see that so many streams of the same water must have had a common source from which they started. What was that source? What was this source? If coming events, I said to cast their shadows before, past events, cannot fail to leave their impress behind them, it is then by those shadows of the hoary past and their fantastic silhouettes on the external screen of every religion and philosophy, that we can, by checking them as we go along and comparing them, trace out finally the body that produced them. There must be truth and fact in that which every people of antiquity accepted and made the foundation of its religions and its faith. This is from The Secret Doctrine.
Our theme for the entire month of October has been Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement, and this conclusion of that theme relates to theosophical landmarks. When we first looked at that title, the assumption was it meant physical properties, like the pyramids in Egypt. But then we realized that a landmark really is a pointer, a way to show you in a particular direction. And in this case, the individuals, those great souls and lesser working souls, managed to provide for us a carrying on of these great ideas, these teachings, down through the ages. Now, on the usher's table, you will find a list from Rama, 3500 BC, to Krishna, 3000 BC, all the way through to the early centuries of our era. And it would behoove everyone to do some research on those particular beings, what they taught, what they offered, what the conditions were like when they offered them. It is a way of proving for oneself, because a landmark only does you any good if you do the work to see what it points to and how it verifies everything else. We are going to read a great deal of this because it's too much for us. We hope it's too much for you as well. On the book table, we also have displayed ancient landmarks, which is a Xerox copy of magazine articles. And because it's a Xerox, it's expensive. If you pick up that list of these great souls at work, you will find at the bottom how you can go online and read every article in Ancient Landmarks and every article in the Great Theosophist series. So it isn't necessary to buy them. We would recommend reading both. It is not possible, even in a presentation that would last for months, to do more than touch on the outline of the efforts of that great brotherhood. So we're going to focus on the modern theosophical movement. In other words, how is it that we, here and now, are the possessors of a portion of this wisdom that we can discuss and share with each other? How is that possible? We're not that far from a time when we would have been persecuted and perhaps even executed for such heresies. Do we realize that in the 1650s, they were executing people in Boston for heresies? Imagine what they would do to all of us. So how did we get here? First, a statement that we can't necessarily prove, a statement by HPB quoting from the Gongpa Lamasari in Tibet, that the Buddha, Gautama the Buddha, Siddhartha, reincarnated in order to repair the degradation into which his secret doctrine had fallen. He was born again in 1357 as Tsongkhapa, and he founded the Yellow Caps, the Gelugpa, in order to rescue Buddhism. But we are also told that in 1375, he called together all of the adepts from around the world to establish a program, a process, a cycle that would bring wisdom to the West. Now think about it a minute. Just picture the world in 1375, where really the only touch of wisdom and order and cleanliness and brightness was in the Muslim world. The West was in the Dark Ages. So what would it take to have the potential to do this in the West? Well, it's very simple, right? You need a way to publish these teachings, to make them available to people. And you need to turn people back to art and beauty and culture and cleanliness and self-respect. Well, we're talking about the 1400s, aren't we? Let's see, that's Gutenberg and the Renaissance. That wasn't easy to do, but it was done. And what about the hold of the Catholic Church in the West? Well, that was England in the 1500s. We'd need to have a place where one could discuss these ideas without fear of the government, and that policies could take away the right to discuss such ideas. That's the colonies, the American colonies in the 1600s. And finally, we would need a country. Imagine, we would need a country in order to make this possible, where no king or dogma or anyone could take away these rights. Because of the law of cycles, Tsongkhapa created a process where it would be the last 25 years of each century to give the human condition, the human mind, time to digest and work with those ideas, as well as the natural law for every movement in this direction, there's an equal opportunity in the opposite direction. So only 25 years of each century. Now, the 1400s are obvious to us all. We all know about the Gutenberg printing press. We all know and admire the Renaissance. But the 1500s may be very obscure to us. Although the Catholic Church had such power that only a few were even willing to look at the writings of Luther, there was one young woman who studied them and passed them on. Very little credit is ever given to Anne Boleyn for introducing King Henry to the teachings of Martin Luther. She had been a student of the Reformation from an early age and studied with the educated women of the French court, which had a different attitude about women and thinking. Some of her reformist ideas included reading the Bible in the vernacular, preaching the Bible instead of the common rituals, and questioning the actions of the Roman Catholic Church. Because she loved debating esoteric theology and analyzing every point of the reformist ideas, she supported the publication of many religious books. The king eventually appointed himself as head of the Church of England, thus breaking the back of the power of the church. In the 1600s, now this starts getting close to home, the Puritans, who were opposed to the elaborate ritual and theurgy and liturgy of the Catholic Church, that they felt was still too prevalent in the Church of England. They wanted to eliminate the religious practices that resembled the Catholic Church, from which this Church of England had sprung. So they finally left England because they were being persecuted for these ideas. My fascination with this part of our own history is the fact that my ancestor, Richard Risley, arrived here in the colonies in 1633 along with fellow religious dissidents. When we were growing up, we always thought because our relative came here so early, he was a prisoner and was deported, and it was a long time before we ever understood this. Along with his fellow religious dissidents, they settled in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. But the leaders of that colony, who had left England for religious freedom, had their own idea of what religious freedom meant. It meant, you will agree with what I think or leave. There was no real religious freedom. There was the dogma of that Puritan sect and what they believed. So, my ancestor and his fellow Puritans left the Massachusetts Bay Colony, walked for 12 days to reach Connecticut, where they set up their own colony, the Connecticut Colony. Still another group that was not allowed to practice their religion in the Massachusetts Bay Colony were the Quakers. To read the history of how they were treated in Boston is almost beyond comprehension. Two Quaker women, Anne Austin and Mary Fisher, arrived in the Bay Colony in 1656. They were not even allowed to set foot on dry land before their possessions were searched and their books deemed heretical, taken from them. They were taken to prison, where they were treated like witches, strip searched to see if the signs of a witch were present on their body. They were forced to return to their homeland. In 1658, a law in the American colonies was introduced that allowed for capital punishment, and four Quakers who refused to renounce their faith and stop preaching were hung in Boston. when we think of this as the land of free religion, but then we see that it wasn't at all. Quakers were murdered for their beliefs. King Charles II intervened and ordered that all Quakers, be sent back to England to be tried, which put an end to the executions and began the banishments. This, of course, touches close to home for all of us. In this city founded by a Quaker, in this state founded by a Quaker, which he called Sylvania Woods, and King Charles called Pennsylvania, Penn's Woods. The reason that William Penn had this land was because King Charles owed his father, Admiral Penn, a great deal of money and couldn't pay it. So he used this land as a way of settling that debt. Penn created a frame of government, is what he called it, a democratic system, full freedom of religion, fair trials, elected representatives, separation of powers, ideas that helped to form the basis of the American Constitution. Now, you're going to keep hearing that, and we think it's significant to realize within that period of the 1600s, over and over and over, there were individuals stating these same ideas that became part of our Constitution, and some that became part of the Declaration of Independence. Penn was friends with the Lenni Lenape Indians, and he saw that they were treated fairly. He made a treaty with the Indians at Shackamaxon. Voltaire said this treaty that Penn and the Lenape Indians had was the only treaty between Indians and Europeans that was not ratified by an oath and was never infringed. Now, perhaps you don't know, to ratify by an oath is against Quakers' beliefs. They do not swear, and they do not, you know, swear as in I swear to the truth of this, and they do not make oaths. So from the start in this not yet country, there were those who saw the necessity for laws to protect each one's freedoms. My ancestor was part of a group that created the first written constitution in Western history, the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut, which was also said to have an influence on the Constitution. As an aside, the Indians also had a great influence on our Constitution. In 1775, treaty commissioners from the Continental Congress met with the chiefs of six nations to inform you of the advice that was given about 30 years ago by your wise forefathers. While independence was debated by the Continental Congress, the visiting Iroquois chiefs were formally invited to attend. In 1787, John Rutledge, a member of the Constitutional Convention and chair of its drafting committee, used the structure of the Iroquois Confederacy as support for the proposition that the political powers come from we, the people, an idea later expressed in the preamble to the Constitution. Also, there was the Albany Plan, considered a landmark on the road that led to the Continental Congress, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution. The Albany Plan, created by Benjamin Franklin, closely resembled the Grand Council of the Iroquois Nations. We begin to see this is a web of ideas leading to the necessity of separating from England. And we don't know how many of you have ever really looked at the lives of the various individuals involved in the revolution, what happened in their lives after. They were committing treason. It took courage to come forward and behave like this. This was a colony of England, and they were saying, no, we will be our own people. We will decide for ourselves. Just an interesting aside. In 1988, the 100th U.S. Congress passed a concurrent resolution acknowledging the contribution of the six nations of the Iroquois Confederacy to the development of the United States government. And there's a very sad irony in that. We would make a resolution, we would make a treaty, but in both cases, we seldom honored the people and their needs themselves. Anyway, we see all of this bringing us to the 1700s. How many of us are really familiar with Thomas Paine, who was born a Quaker? We may have read some of his writings. We may know that George Washington said Paine was responsible for our independence, since his writings fired up the minds and hearts of the men who fought the British. Now, we know where that happened, right? We can go and visit the nearby national park. And that's in the cold of the winter that these hearts and minds were stirred. That his writing of the Age of Reason, where he denied the Bible as the world of God, word of God, condemned many Old Testament stories as immoral, was basically a deist manifesto and caused him to be defamed in any way possible. Interestingly enough, he had become a French citizen then and was serving in an official capacity. He was imprisoned in France because of the stand he took against the behavior of the government. And while in prison, he wrote The Age of Wisdom, which is a magnificent document, but it literally destroyed him in the minds and hearts of the Christians in America. And he was calumniated. And everything bad they could think of to say about him, they said. And we can only assume that anyone like Thomas Paine, who said the ideas that he was expressing in his writings were fully born in his mind. He didn't write them. He wrote them down, is how he felt. And why anyone with such a capacity would behave in the way it was claimed he behaved, to be a drunk and behave immorally, it makes no sense whatsoever. You would not risk that connection with that light in your mind. It makes no sense. Washington and Jefferson tried to persuade their fellow citizens of the debt that was owed to Paine. But really, it was only New York State that tried to help him. They gave him property in New Rochelle, New York. And you can go and see his home, now a museum, and where he was buried, but not where he lies. No one knows where the body is. But it is known that it was taken to England in 1819 by a Will Cobbett, because he felt the Americans showed no respect for Paine. Another figure we may know not much about is the Marquis de Lafayette, one of the heroes of the Revolutionary War. King George III's brother actually convinced Lafayette to fight against Great Britain. And although he was only 19 and had no combat experience, he did not hesitate to join. Defying the explicit orders of King Louis XVI, who did not wish to provoke Great Britain, the Marquis eluded authorities and crossed the Atlantic Ocean to assist the rebellious Americans in 1777. Although still a teenager who spoke little English and lacked any battle experience, Lafayette convinced the Continental Army to commission him a major general. During the Battle of Brandywine near Philadelphia in September of 1777, he was shot in the calf. Refusing treatment, he managed to organize a successful retreat, and following a two-month recuperation, he was given command over his own division for the first time. He's a teenager. I mean, this is just amazing. Inspired by the ideals of the American Revolution, the Marquis wrote one of the most important documents about human and civil rights with the help of Thomas Jefferson. The French National Assembly adopted the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen in 1789, and it remains enshrined in France's present-day constitution. After the 76-year-old Lafayette died in Paris in 1834, he was laid to rest in a small Paris cemetery. To carry out the request of the hero of the two worlds to be buried in both American and French soil, his son covered his coffin with dirt they had taken from Bunker Hill in 1825, when the Marquis laid the cornerstone to the monument that still marks the battlefield. His grave is maintained by the Daughters of the American Revolution, and an American flag always flies over it. But you notice, throughout this presentation, what it took to allow us to have the public expression of the ancient wisdom that we now have, it was the words and ideas and writings of individuals brought together to create our Constitution, and it takes us full circle, for it could not have happened without Tsongkhapa and the Great Brotherhood of Great Souls. It would be, I don't know, perhaps fun, interesting, exciting to try to picture what they set out to do and how they planned to do it. It's an amazing story. And the amazing thing is, it's true. And that it isn't that familiar to most Americans. We take so much for granted. Now, your questions are invited. And if we didn't make it clear, please do pick up the from the usher's table. Yes?
More of a comment. In that presentation, I stated at the end, much of what happened during those 600 years was the work of individuals, mm-hmm. and as stated, it was for the purpose of bringing these ideas to the public awareness of the public.
I don't know if everybody can hear you.
To public awareness,
yes.
The work of individuals. It almost sounds like we're entering a new cycle, because since then, in the last 100 years. It seems more that the theosophical movement is not so much the effort of individuals, but of groups affiliating themselves with that idea, and as groups trying to make those ideas practical mm-hmm. and different in the world. It's not so much individuals, but groups of individuals taking those ideas and taking responsibility for the movement.
Exactly. And how are those groups able to do that? Because of the ideas of the individuals. If you go online, you will find there are many theosophical publications online. And most of them are really very good. Some stray from what is really the pure teachings of theosophy. But there's a lot of active interest and enthusiasm for these ideas. We're always staggered by going into a bookstore and seeing row after row of what should be called the teachings of the Buddha. But they're called self-help and how to do this and how to do that. It's all the same ideas used in a particular fashion. Well, certainly ULT is a group. And it is in places we would never have expected. Do you agree? Mexico and, yes?
I remember seeing Italy.
Italy?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes. Yes, the rigidity of dogma, of control of a people through a government in the West is crumbling. We recall being in Italy during Easter and seeing young women walk into the church bareheaded in shorts. Everything is changing. Yes.
Well, you know, the idea that, you know, as new continents rise, old continents have to fall. That's just the way the cycles go. And, you know, HPB mentioned that in the 20th century that there would be cracks in the foundation mm-hmm. of the Catholic Church, one of the many institutions to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
And we always wondered, well, what does it really mean? And we thought one of the signs is that not so many people go there anymore. But what we've recently learned is since the Dark Ages, since the 600s, every single pope has taken an oath to uphold the decrees of every pope in the history of the church, all the way back. Literally, this oath is a swearing as though their decrees are divine from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last quarter of the 20th century, the first pope in a line of 180 popes refused to take it. So he's not bound to the historicity of that. And we think that's more of a tectonic shift
yes.
than just a crack. And no pope since has. So it frees them in certain ways. We wonder if that's not the crack that needs to happen for reincarnation and karma to come
right.
into it, because there's so much written against it in the past. It's no longer binding.
Binding to the Pope. The other thing is Pope Francis has certainly made some statements that are quite shocking. His faith is in, it seems, humanity more than in the church. Yes?
And what we also found interesting in terms of cycles, you know, so it happened in 1978. That was the first one who didn't, so the fourth quarter of the century. And it happened right about 1,500 years from when the first oath was taken.
That's amazing. Thank you. Yes?
Well, there have been some other cracks in the world of religion and science that HPB talked about. Of course, we had the discovery of the Nag Hammadi libraries. They told us about the Gnostics and Dead Sea Scrolls, about the Sians,
mm-hmm.
The discovery of the electron and the development of quantum physics. And it's very interesting to read the writings of the pioneers of quantum science. Planck, Einstein, they all talk about ideas that they learned or were influenced by from the East.
Right.
And share those ideas, but see them in a scientific way. Right?
And we left out the transcendentalists because mm-hmm. they were very important in the West, bringing the Gita to the people. it's all ideas anyway, as we know. It's the ideas that you hold that create the way you will live and the way you will reincarnate. We found some interesting things about William Penn. This is just unbelievable. And this was in England. He was expelled from Oxford for being a Quaker and was arrested several times. The most famous of these arrests was the trial following his arrest for preaching before a Quaker gathering. Now, this is almost humorous. Penn pleaded for his right to see a copy of the charges laid against him. And the laws supposedly allowed him to have that right. But the Lord Mayor of London, who was the judge in the trial, refused. Despite heavy pressure from the Lord Mayor to convict Penn and the others, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty. The Lord Mayor then not only had Penn sent to jail again for a charge of contempt of court, but also the full jury. The members of the jury, fighting their case from prison, managed to win the right for all English juries to be free from the control of judges. It's amazing, yes.
Isn't that how the right of habeas corpus came about, too?
Where probably.
You have the right to face your accuser.
Right, right.
Which is a very important right. We're not sure, but we think that's where it came
probably.
From.
This, of course, was jury nullification, you know, that they're free from the restrictions of the judge. Interesting things about our area, too. Burlington, New Jersey, while in England, because, of course, Penn owned all this land, while in England, he drafted a Charter of Liberties for the settlement in Burlington. He guaranteed free and fair trial by jury, freedom of religion, freedom from unjust imprisonment, and free elections. Amazing, amazing man. This is just a fun one. One of the first counties of Pennsylvania was called Bucks County, named after Buckinghamshire in England, where Penn's family seat was, and from most of the first settlers came. In 1984, President Ronald Reagan, upon an act of Congress by presidential proclamation, declared William Penn to be an honorary citizen of the United States. Yes?
Regarding Thomas Paine, there's a particular quote that a number of folks have found particularly inspiring us. And it goes, "We have it in our power to create the world anew."
Yes.
And ideas like that so inspiring.
Inspired people, yes. Hope and dreams always will inspire people. But when you read these histories, it breaks your heart. William Penn died penniless. Thomas Paine died penniless. Yes?
Just as an exercise of consideration, it said that in every age, those working for the Theosophical movement had to work within the conditions of the time.
Mm-hmm.
How would we characterize the conditions of our time that would be needed to be kept in mind by those wanting to promote,
right,
promulgate the ideas? What do we need to
do? Excellent question. What do you think? What are the... I thought so. You're not heard by everybody. What are the conditions? When those working within the Theosophical movement in any age are commencing their work, they have to do it in the conditions in which they find themselves. What are the conditions we now face? Whoops, yes.
Well, perhaps, whereas in the past, the student of theosophy was challenged by the ignorance, mm-hmm, of the people, today we are an educated country, and so there's a lot of unlearning that they, mm-hmm, have to do first, as well as, you know, the amazing distractions of a materialistic society where really they don't really care so much because of, you know, they'd rather stay.
They have so much to do.
Yeah.
So much amusement. Yes.
It would seem that the byproduct of the Industrial Revolution and now the Electronic Revolution is a tremendous amount of leisure time. And with it comes the threat or the challenge of passivity, mm-hmm, of being entertained, enjoying whatever, just frittering away precious resources of mind and concentration, etc. So those conditions are something that we could work with as individuals and as a collective.
Right. Well, it would seem, you know, the way to get people's attention is something that they can view on their smartphone or their tablet. Maybe we should be making videos. Videos of discussions, not formal things like this, but just two people talking. We don't know how many of you saw the film, which we've decided to forget the name of right now. It was, okay, you know that place in France where the water comes up and then you can't get into the building and then the water pulls back?
St. Michael's?
Yes, yes, it is. It's, yeah. Well, there was a film made there with three individuals walking through something of mind, it's called.
Mind talk? Mind walk?
Mind walk, yes, that's it. And the three individuals are discussing philosophy and each bringing their own awareness and ideas and reaching this amazing conclusion. Maybe we should do something like that. Even us, a little group like us. Maybe just people talking to each other, questioning ideas. Yes?
In the latter part of the 16th century, Giordano Bruno was a major thorn in the church's side. And he traveled all over Europe. When he was in England, he was very good friends with King Henry III of France and had his protection. But when he was in England, he was actually working with the persecuted Catholics, and when he was in France, he was working with the persecuted Protestants, and he was trying to get them to communicate with each other,
right,
to get them on the same page. But he believed in infinite universes, that everything mirrors one another. He spoke about monads. And when he was tricked by the Inquisition to come back to Italy, but after he was put to death in 1600, well, 400 years later, the Pope apologized, but he's still called an irremediable heretic,
mm-hmm,
to this day.
And we have him on the list as well.
he's considered an irremediable heretic because, really, if they went with him, the church would have theosophy.
Right. Well, you know, HPB directs us to restore the reputation of those who have been so completely abused and such calumny against them. It's unbelievable, yes.
It was in the news in the last couple of days that a papal emissary and the head of the Lutheran Worldwide Associations have now gotten together and pretty much apologized each other for the Lutheran schism, with the Vatican agreeing that the teachings at the time on the Catholic side were wrong in the following ways, and the Lutheran side agreeing that on their side certain things were wrong with Luther. And their goal for the immediate future now, but immediate means centuries from now, is to get to the point where they agree on females in the clergy and the nature of the communion. But that's a very interesting time, that while things are disintegrating,
there's
this
efforts,
desperate force to try to bring their power back.
Which we would think is going to reduce their power, because people don't like change. And how do the average Catholics feel, and how do the Lutherans feel? It's going to be interesting. We missed that altogether, so we'll have to go and look for it. But what else about this time? You know, it's interesting that you keep reading that people say they're not religious, but they are spiritual, which means there's a hunger that's building within humanity to have some aid and assistance to know in which direction to go. And a lot of people are giving up their successful careers and going back to the land and looking for what's natural. Yes.
And at the same time, we have the dogmatic who are using power and politics, etc., as best they can to kind of worm their way back into the arena. So it's a time to be alert and aware and free-thinking and as discerning as possible in all of our conversations throughout our lives.
We think the saddest thing about the internet right now is whenever there's a point of contention brought up, there's never any discussion about the point of contention. It's that, well, he said, she said, he did, she did. And it's never resolved down to the principles of what's being discussed. Yes?
Well, the problem is today that you can just absorb news that agrees with your opinion.
Right.
Anyone can. There's so many opinions out there, and you can just focus on things that you agree with, rather than considering the other side. So there's not much dialogue going on. There's just a lot of factions.
Yes. And very easy to fall into a sort of line of thinking without thinking. It's hard times. Yes.
Wasn't Saint-Germain who said, I have to disappear for a while to help in the invention of the steam engine?
Mm-hmm. He did.
So we could maybe consider from that the development of the steam engine really helped bring about the
Industrial Revolution. Yes.
So if we are living in a communications, digital communications age, which has such an impact, It would seem that although there are downsides to Gutenberg press, and there's downsides, there's to the Industrial Revolution.
But we could be the upside.
It's obviously a tremendous
potential
tool and means to share ideas and in all the ways we spoke of. So we've always tried to search for a link between the development of Wide Web and the internet, and the only thing we could find was an individual who did actually develop the World Wide Web for the first time, put it into activity, was a member of a very liberal church in terms of his other connection, such as is said to exist between
right.
Saint Germain and the...
Well, maybe what we should do, knowing that this is a power, and every power has two uses, two sides, maybe we should do a little brainstorming, every one of us. What could we do to avail ourselves of this great communication method? What could we be doing? Certainly our podcasts are useful, and we just got a report back from our tech person that half of the things that were marked as not functioning all had the same problem, and he's fixing them. So there is a recording there. It just wasn't available. Yes?
Well, let's say, starting with really stagecoaches, and then the steam engine, and then onward to, you know, Morse code and telephone lines, really this is, in a way, the evolution of a collective neural pathways that are going all around the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extension of a collective neural pathway, so that now that we've got social media, those neural pathways are like our realities, you know? And so the what was the power of a mob that was confined to the courtyard unless somebody outside heard it, now is heard by the world. And so there's a lot of good that can be said about that. For instance, the Arab Spring,
mm-hmm.
that kind of didn't turn out the way some people would have hoped it would have. But still, that's one of probably many things that are going to, you know, happen forever.
Well, sooner or later, Kali Yuga is going to end. 400 and some thousand years. But there might be things that we could contribute. Certainly, we're all thoughtful and energetic and devoted to this, so there might be. Yes.
One idea that we know of, one individual is definitely doing, is very easy for anybody with a computer to set up a Twitter account, and it's also very easy every day to just post to a small sentence or a line from the writings of Robert Crosby.
All right, we have a question. Where does it go?
Well,
does it go to individuals?
It goes to other individuals have Twitter accounts who are interested in philosophy and religion
okay.
and New Age, you know.
Well, that goes on Facebook as well. So,
yes.
But we were thinking maybe of something more sophisticated that people would turn to, you know, looking for a particular answer to something. And there's a lot of people questioning right now, a lot of frustration. We don't know if you heard of the latest protest. It was one of the supremacist groups, the same one that had been at Charlottesville, attempting to give a presentation. And the protesters stayed far away from them and played La Bamba very loudly the whole time. That was their protest. And the speaker could not be heard and finally left in frustration. So there are ways to handle things that are perhaps different from what we had considered. But now we remind you that we go into November and our subject relates to principles. It's basic theosophical principles. And this coming Sunday is self-evident theosophical principles. Meeting is adjourned.